Hello, everybody. My name is John Haynes. I'm the Head of Research at SFR Investment. And today I'm here to give you an update on developments in markets since the Prime Minister's most recent announcement on the easing of lockdowns in the UK. And after I've done that, I'm going to pass over to Chris Hill, who is our Chief Investment Officer, who will be talking to you about income portfolios. So quickly on to my subject, what happened really in the last week or so, does that make us feel better or worse about life? I'd like to first of all give a quick reprise of where we are, and context is important at this time. Since the beginning of the year, global equities are down around 14% in dollar terms, and that is a relatively modest fall in the context, I think, of what appears to be, and indeed one of the most traumatic events that many of us have been through in our lives. And the question that one must first ask is whether or not, what's the reason for this relatively good performance in context? And I think the two key reasons are because the response of the global monetary and fiscal authorities has been overwhelming, and they have essentially taken away the fear that the impact of the virus would be not just traumatic in the short term, but traumatic in the long term too, and have made people understand that the viral impact is going to be traumatic but temporary. So the next question then comes to markets, and markets are therefore being able to start looking forward rather than be transfixed by the events that they've been witnessing. And that's where we come to the Prime Minister's most recent announcements about the very gentle, and I think that's right to put it that way, easing of restrictions in the UK. Also we've seen a similar easing of restrictions a little earlier than that, in fact, in many of the European countries. But the characteristics of all the easings so far have been that they have been very mild, very, very gentle indeed, by no means a sudden opening up of all the capacity that has been shut down in the social economy. What this means is markets, taking a look at these measures, have begun to try and draw a picture for themselves of the recovery, and are beginning to suspect that maybe when they had hoped that it would be dramatic and sharp, maybe the course to recovery will be a little slower and take some time to build. And I think that is the mood of the market today. I think a hope that maybe that it will be all over sooner rather than later are being pushed out somewhat. And I think markets are consolidating with that in mind. Having said that, it still is the case that we are making material advances, and the progress we've made in viral control is encouraging, and the world is now moving through its top and starting to see a recovery. And once we get confidence in our ability to control its spread, be it because we have some form of treatment available, or because we have the measures for suppressing it, particularly well implemented, and I think the new big data techniques of tracking individuals play a big part in this, as will do the ability of us to test comprehensively our population. The combination of those two means that I think from here onwards we will only see easing of net restrictions rather than tightening, and it is just a question of how quickly those restrictions are eased. At the moment, the picture is that the world economy is about at its worst possible point. The data that we are seeing reflects an almost total shutdown of civil liberties across the world, and there is now no single part of the world, no person in any jurisdiction is not subject to some form of social control as a result of the virus. So as we come out of this, we're talking about the data we're seeing today is in order to all intents and purposes abysmal. We have had to expect this and do expect this. So seeing GDP figures of -5%, -6% last quarter from around the world. I think it's -5% in the US, and we just had a GDP print in the UK of negative just under 3%. Actually, that was a little less than we were worried about. But nonetheless, these numbers, which are essentially figures which are consistent with enormous economic pain, given that we believe the issue is traumatic and temporary, will only be in place for a short time. And what we have to do is concentrate on annualized numbers rather than short-term numbers. And those numbers, we believe, by the time we hit the third quarter, will be improving relatively rapidly. So that's the context. What do we do in that context? Unfortunately, the pain has been sufficient. Clearly, the corporate profits have been severely impacted, and indeed, dividends and income too. And that has been an unusual feature of this particular crisis. The cash flow crunch has been so severe that dividends have been impacted relatively quickly and severely, and now for us to be optimistic about the investment environment going forward, we need to look out 24 months or 12 to 24 months and see those dividends coming back again. Quality in this environment is key, and while we are still uncertain about the speed of the retracement of the lost economic output, that is likely to be the case for the foreseeable future. With that, I think you've heard enough from me. Our Chief Investment Officer, Chris Hill, has agreed to speak today about income. With that, I'm going to hand over to Chris ask him to take over from here. When he's finished, I will wind up the meeting and just rule.
Thank you very much, John. So I think this is a very unusual climate for investors, as John was alluding to, the combination of falling capital values for investments and falling income is a fairly rare one. So, for example, during the financial crisis of 12 years ago, equity dividends across the board, the insurance stock markets were roughly maintained. The banking sector clearly took the strain in that environment for dividend paying, but much of the rest of the global stock market was largely unaffected in its ability to pay dividends. Even back in the crash of 2001-2, stock markets capital values fell sharply, but dividend income was again broadly maintained. And even in the 1970s, famous bear market in the 1970s, dividend income actually went up, albeit not keeping pace with inflation in that very unusual world where inflation reached more than 20% in the UK. So the combination of falling income and falling capital from equity investments hasn't really happened since the 1930s, so it is very unusual. As John was saying, the speed at which the change of operating conditions for businesses came about was really what forced companies to grasp the nettle fairly immediately. We saw fairly recently the decision by Shell to cut its dividend for the first time since World War II. And Shell was at the time the largest payer by some margin of dividends across the entire UK stock market. So we're very conscious of the concern that investors, our clients, will have about the likely outlook for their dividend streams. Dividends have been potentially cut for three different reasons. Firstly, a need for the company to remain solvent. I think our focus on better than average business models and stronger than average balance sheets, that our exposure to those types of companies is comparatively low. There's clearly been an instruction by regulators to cancel all dividends for the banking and insurance sector. And that's not just UK, that's been brought through across Europe as well. And then there's a desire to be seen to share the pain potentially, so that employees are being paid less, or they're being furloughed, then companies are nervous about being seen to pay out shareholders in a way that suggests that nothing much has happened. So I think there's three different factors there, which are going behind the outcome of falling dividends. One of the other problems about the UK stock market in particular is that the concentration of dividends, a large part of the dividend that would come from investing in the steel share index, for example, comes from only about a dozen companies, and it's a much more concentrated payout than it would be across other global equity markets. And the level of dividend cover, so that's the proportion of corporate profits paid out as dividends, is actually higher in the UK than it is in many other parts of the world. So paying for an investor in the UK stock market is perhaps more apparent than elsewhere. Unfortunately, from our point of view, we have a lot of our equity exposure outside the UK stock market. And even our exposure within the UK stock market in equities is in less attractive businesses, and certainly our experience is not as bad as the headlines. What have we been doing about it since the world changed? I think there's been an increasing focus within our research team for companies that have the strength, both in terms of balance sheet and in terms of market position, to be as resilient as possible during this very uncertain time. Clearly, we don't really know how long the trough will be before normal business can resume. We are certainly looking for businesses that have the capability of resuming business as usual, that have increased market share because they can pick up business from weak competitors, and shareholders ultimately will benefit from that. And obviously we are looking also outside the equity markets in broad terms for other sources of predictable and meaningful income. Historically, one might have looked at fixed interest markets, but given the minimal level of interest rates being imposed by central banks around the world, neither bonds issued by governments nor bonds issued by financially robust companies are likely to pay much in the way of dividend. So if you were to lend money to the UK government for the next 10 years, as of today, you will earn a princely sum of 2% interest, and that's over the entire 10-year period, not per annum. So fixed interest investments as a source of alternative source of income is not really meaningful. It might be a source of capital stability, but it certainly isn't a source of meaningful income. So we are looking outside those traditional asset classes. Historically, one might have looked at commercial property, but clearly in terms of the degree to which various tranches of commercial property, such as hotels, the retail sector, effectively all shut down, and most of those landlords are choosing not to pay rent at the moment, so that's not a great source of income either. However, there are alternatives. The ownership of GP surgeries, for example, has been resilient. All those income payments have been received as usual. The ownership of social housing properties, a very essential quantity for society, these have all been received as usual. And there are quality companies whose entire business models focus around the ownership and provision of those assets to the public sector. The other area where we've seen success has been in the provision of infrastructure, so that's probably the supply and maintenance of public sector assets such as schools, hospitals, libraries, courthouses, those sorts of things, where government bodies effectively operate within those assets and are paying for the provision and maintenance of those assets on long-term 20-year contracts that have built-in proofing for income certainty. So those income streams have been resilient, and the market has responded to the predictability of that income by meaning that the share prices have actually also been particularly resilient in the last 2 or 3 months. So that's a sort of idea. I think if we look across portfolios as a whole, we would expect this year to see some fall in dividend income, and clearly for clients who are most sensitive to that dividend income, there's a little bit that we may be able to do to protect them from the magnitude of the fall, but not a huge amount without transforming the nature of the portfolio and potentially compromising its long-term capital performance. I have to be quite realistic to clients that there has to be some short-term pain, which is difficult to avoid entirely, which is our best to mitigate it. But in the long term, particularly if we enter a new world with potentially high levels of inflation 2 or 3 years ahead, then the need to have real assets with a long-term income stream to protect you against that inflationary pickup will become apparent. So trying to maintain a long-term exposure is as important as being aware of what we can do to minimise the pain in the very short term. That's probably enough to summarise, and then hand back to John.
Thank you, Chris, very much for that. Many things to think about on the income front, and I think one concrete data point of note, I said earlier, was to look past the systematic but temporary events and try and understand the intrinsic value of the investments we're making. And if you look at dividend futures markets, which actually show what investors think the income on their portfolios will look like in 1 or 2 or 3 years' time, the income on world equities or world indices in 2022 is expected to be about 20% lower than it was in 2019, the year just passed. And if one thinks that the equity markets so far have fallen, as I said, about 50% global equity terms, one can see that investors probably have taken on board that haircut in income, which is the primary force that supports ultimately the reason for making investments in risky assets. Pretty soon, if we can grow from that level, then the crisis will be put behind us relatively quickly by time and by the entrepreneurial spirit that ultimately capitalism delivers to us of shareholder returns. So with that, I'm going to wind up and wish everybody very well. We hope you stay safe and well, and we will be back again next week.